Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. It's almost March. As we speak, we're about an hour from there being major league teams playing against each other in the sunshine. So things change more and more every week, and we got plenty to talk about. But we start with one of the actually biggest name free agents of the entire winter, who just signed. In fact, the deal just became official this morning. Matt Wieters now goes from Baltimore to Washington. There are reasons not to like this. The ballpark is a little less friendly. He won't have the opportunity to DH sometimes. And yet I find myself kind of irrationally optimistic about Wieters. I feel like maybe one more full year, maybe a little health, I could see one more really nice year from him. Where are you on Wieters?
Yeah, I think I've lost any expectations that I had a few years ago for him to ever be like a top five fantasy catcher. I kind of have him in that like lower end of, for one catcher leagues, 10th, 9th, 10th, 11th in my catcher rankings. And I'll be honest, I didn't really move him with this signing. Like, I liked the Orioles lineup when he was with them. I liked the Nats lineup. I agree with what you said. You know, the park switch isn't great for him. But I like the lineup. I worry maybe that he hits way, way down in the lineup. That would concern me if he hits eighth. But if he gets a spot at sixth or so, then I don't really want to move him much. I am worried a little bit, though, about him hitting really low in the lineup and then that costing him ability to score at least some runs. Do you think you still hold some optimism for him? You think he could maybe still be better than he was the last year?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Look, I don't see him having a huge breakout year. I don't see him hitting 30 home runs or something. But I can definitely see him one more year back farther away from being hurt with a normal spring, or at least a relatively normal spring. He signed early enough that it should be normal. I can definitely see him putting together one more good year. I'm not going to go all out to get him, but there's kind of a tier of guys who are to some extent all fairly similar once you start looking at that point in the draft. I think I can just see a little more upside for him than with some of them. We've seen some really good things from him, and it wouldn't shock me if he ran into, say, 20 home runs this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think when you get down to, I see him, Yadier Molina, Stephen Vogt, Wellington Castillo, they're kind of seem to all be in a tier, maybe just slightly below Russell Martin and Brian McCann, or even almost with them. So out of all those catchers, you know, if you wait in a one-catcher league, if you just want to wait till late rounds, you know, you'll probably have a couple of those guys to choose from, and Wieters might be one of them. And, you know, you're kind of saying you would lean for him.
Castillo and Wieters would be the two guys from that group I like. And we'll talk a little more about this to let you know, a little foreshadowing. We will be talking catchers a little later in the Fantasy 411 today. But I think one of the things you note is that one catcher versus two catchers, shallow versus deep leagues, catcher strategy probably varies more from league to league than nearly any other position. So I think we'll definitely get to that, maybe closers, but that'll definitely be something we talk about a little later. But we move down, continuing the news, and also in Washington, and this is less good news. Max Scherzer still dealing with what seems to be a relatively mild finger injury, but it's persistent. It's not gone away, and he's now saying, look, I hope to be there opening day, but I can't completely guarantee opening day. I have the good fortune that I'm not drafting anywhere for another 3 weeks or so, so I can sort of say not worried about it personally and make that assessment later. But if you're drafting now, how much, if at all, do you ding the possibility of losing one or two starts from Scherzer? And maybe more importantly, how much do you ding him for the worry that, again, this is one of the things we talked about last week, we're a few months down the road now, it's still not completely gone. What's your level of worry that this is something of a factor all year? And in addition to costing him 6% of his starts, maybe cost him 5% of his performance over the course of the year.
Yeah, it's enough. I think it's enough for me to probably not take him in the first round. And as we talked about last week, I did take him in the first round of that labor draft. Now, that was before this news came out. And when you draft, you can only deal with what you know. If I had to do over again, I don't think I would take him in the first round. To me, this is just enough of a concern for me to push him probably in the second round. But I don't think yet I would draw. I think I would be pretty happy if I got him in the second round. I think I would still take him ahead of Madison Bumgarner, although it's definitely close, because now you can really make a case that Bumgarner's safer. So if you're in like a 10 or a 12 team league, which a lot of people are, and you're looking kind of mid-second round, I think I would still take Scherzer. I mean, the potential for Scherzer to just be fine by opening day and get you the 280 strikeouts is there. I think now, though, and we had that discussion, we did the starting pitcher preview of how close are Scherzer and Bumgarner. Now I couldn't argue with taking Bumgarner.
Right, and part of the issue there is that, you know, when you talk Scherzer, part of the appeal is his seeming indestructibility. I mean, this guy has racked up so many innings in recent years that, you know, you count on him to take the ball every 5 days and be effective. And if there's any question in that, that eats into one of the reasons that you draft him so highly.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, and his value, when we talked about him versus Bumgarner, and you could say the same thing talking about him versus Kluber. The thing with Scherzer is if he makes his 32 or 33 starts, he's going to get you the 270 plus strikeouts. Well, if we take that even down to 30 starts or 29 right. starts, now, you know, the strikeout total drops probably to 250 or below. Well, now once we're at 250 or below, we're pretty much in we're where Bumgarner was last season. So now the reliability with Bumgarner not having any injury that we know about, now you start to, like, it doesn't take much for Scherzer to drop from, it only goes from 32 or 33 starts down to about 29, and all of a sudden he's for sure dropped a tier in the pitcher ranking.
Right, right. The Rangers get bad but not surprising news as Josh Hamilton is sidelined again, which means that we don't have a lot of read as to what they're going to do in left field. Whoever gets those at-bats is in a pretty good spot. That's a team that's going to score some runs. It's a really good place to hit. Are you backing Jurickson Profar there? Is there somebody else you like more? How do you read that?
Yeah, it seems that they're maybe kind of leaning Profar, and I felt like this offseason, like, Profar seems to always come up in a lot of trade rumors, and this offseason that happened again, but they didn't deal him, and they could certainly have used pitching help, but they didn't deal him. And I wonder if this is, they maybe think that this is their opportunity, if he has a solid spring training performance, you know, if this is their opportunity to finally give him a chance to take a position and run with it. Because I feel like he's, even without the injuries, he never really had that chance. There were always other players at all the positions he was playing in the puzzle. I'm interested to see if they just give Profar a chance to just be the left fielder, you know, five times a week and really see what he can do. And if that happens, you know, he wasn't great last season, but I think he still has enough potential that you'd want to draft him late in a mixed league to see, you know, what will come of that. So I feel like now he's on that, maybe not in a 10-team yet, but in a 12-team and for sure a 15-team league, he's on the radar. Let me ask you this, Matthew. If he was playing all the time, regularly, would you want him in a mixed league? Or would you be...
Well, that's the question, because to me the whole question is how much do you like the player? I mean, he's still very young. And it's still only 650 big league at-bats, but it is 600 or plate appearances, but it is 650 big league plate appearances. And he hadn't hit yet. And look, I'm not ready to write him off in the long term, but I feel like there's this, I'd be hesitant to jump too much. He's a guy, I will almost certainly like him less than somebody in my draft, even if he gets the opportunity. Part of the appeal was his bat for a middle infielder. You know, how much does that play for the bat at left field? So, you know, I'm not down on him entirely. I'm not saying I wouldn't touch him, but I would need to see. Yeah, I'm just not really buying. I'm not saying you shouldn't, dear listeners, but I'm saying I'm not.
Yeah, no, I understand the skepticism. There's nothing really in his major league numbers to indicate that this is a guy who's worth being a sleeper. The one thing that's attached to him that I can't quite shake yet is he was once ranked as the top prospect in baseball, and he's never had a chance to have, you know, a full season or even half a season where he's healthy and he has the same spot every day in the lineup, in the field, and can really, you know, see what he can do. And I'm interested to see if I'm interested for a late round pick to see what he could do in that situation. But I agree with you that there's nothing in what he's done in those 600 plus plate appearances in the majors to indicate that a major breakout's coming.
And you know, part of it, look, you look at his minor league numbers, and he was young and he was a very good hitter in the minors. But you know, he never really flashed big power in the minors. And so, you know, if it's the kind of profile, again, I don't want to overstate it. Again, he's young, and he, look, maybe he breaks out in a huge way, but you know, the kind of profile that you look at is 280, 290, 15 homers. That could be a really good player for a middle infielder. That doesn't quite ring the bell in the same way in left field. So, you know, again, if they say, look, he's our everyday guy, then certainly in an AL-only league he has some value. But I would have some hesitation. I just think we hear the name of a guy who was a really big-time prospect, and we hear opening. And I'm not really I'm just not ready to sort of add those two things up and say that's going to be a star performer.
Yeah, I can understand that. I might be just as excited if they said Delino DeShields was going to get a chance to play.
Sure, yeah. He actually, from a fantasy perspective, sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, in 2015, he was quite effective and valuable for fantasy teams and then, you know, really struggled last year. So whoever, I mean, the Rangers should have a good lineup, and that's a good park to hit in. So, you know, if they pick one guy to run with during spring training, I think that person is kind of a sleeper.
Speaking of up-the-middle prospects who are playing left field, how about that segue? Kyle Schwarber may hit leadoff for the Cubs. I think this is really interesting. I think it's pretty smart. But I also think it's, you know, it's an indication that they certainly intend to play him an awful lot. I don't think that's a spot where teams generally are going to platoon all that much. So all things being equal, what is this all things considered, what is this piece of news say to you about how you're valuing Schwarber right now?
Yeah, you hit really the point that struck home to me. I don't love Schwarber necessarily as a leadoff hitter. It's the same thing with Carlos Santana when he hits leadoff at times for the Indians, where, you know, we look at Schwarber as a power hitter, an RBI producer. That's harder to do from the leadoff spot. So I don't really feel like he gets a positive change for moving to the leadoff spot. I don't think it's necessarily really a negative one, but it didn't strike me as a positive change. The change that, in opinion for me, is, yeah, you don't name a leadoff hitter and then say he's only going to play in half our games, yeah, especially in February, saying that, you know, this guy could be our leadoff hitter. If he's their leadoff hitter, he's their leadoff hitter against all right-handers and maybe even some lefties. And if he's their leadoff hitter, then he's getting, he might get 500 at-bats now, and then that makes him more intriguing. And then the trickle-down effect of that is if he's in left field as their leadoff hitter, then Ben Zobrist isn't, which means Zobrist, I guess, is at second base on those days, which means Javier Baez is not starting, or he's back to kind of moving all around the diamond, which I think makes him much, much less appealing in mixed leagues.
Yeah, I think that's a key part of all of this. One thing I would note about Schwarber and where he hits in the lineup is if he turns out to be some sort of power monster, if he comes out and hits 20 home runs in the first 2.5 months, he probably doesn't continue leading off. I mean, I think, you know, as much as Joe Maddon likes to be unconventional, as much as the Cubs certainly are not defined by orthodoxy, I also think that if Schwarber shows up and just starts hitting the ball out of the park on a regular basis, they will come up with other things, and he'll hit a little further down in the lineup and have a chance to drive and run. So I don't think that he's going to be in a position where he hits 35 home runs and has 70 RBI. If he shows that kind of power, I suspect they will adjust it, and he will also continue playing.
Yeah, I agree. To me, Schwarber has as wide of a range of possible 2017, you know, production outcome as just about any player, because we could see him playing virtually every day and at some point fairly early in the season gaining catcher eligibility in all leagues and then becoming extremely valuable where he could compete to be the number one fantasy catcher. Or we could see him not pick up that catcher eligibility, sit against all lefties, you know, hit for a mediocre or low average. I mean, we are talking about a guy who's coming off a serious injury, didn't play basically all of last season, and isn't a high average hitter necessarily in the first place, and then be actually dropped in some 10-team leagues because people don't need him at the outfield spot and he doesn't have that catcher eligibility. So, I mean, the range for him could be anything from being a top 40 or 50 asset to being on waivers.
Do a little ranking of some injured veterans. I'm not entirely sure how to rank these, but I kind of want to rank them by concern because we've got you brought up four guys here, I think I'm least concerned about Josh Donaldson. I think I am probably next Adrian Beltre, then Zach Britton, then Adrian Gonzalez. I think Gonzalez is the guy who worries me the most with a joint. Guys get sore muscles. you know, the Britain thing is a little concerning because even though they're treating it, discussing it as very mild, obliques are just really scary, man. Obliques, those things, they're nagging. They can seem they're fixed and not be fixed. But I think the guy that it's the most concerning to me is Gonzalez, just because tendonitis in the elbow sounds a little scary. Do you rank them differently than I do?
I was probably the least concerned about Britain, just because it wasn't an arm injury and we're so far from opening day. But I know what you mean about obliques. I agree with you that I'm not concerned about Donaldson at all. Even though it could be a few weeks for him, he's just been so durable and he's such a gamer. I would need to see him miss regular season time before I believe it'll happen. And yeah, I think Gonzalez is probably the one I'm the most concerned about. That being said, the draft day cost on Gonzalez is the lowest of all those players by a lot. So, I mean, you could absorb a DL stint by him more readily than the others. But my concern with Gonzalez actually isn't necessarily the DL stint. It's that if he's hampered, he doesn't have as much of a margin for error as the others. So if he's hampered by an injury during the season and his performance falls off on a per-game basis, now he just may not be very valuable at all.
And you will more often see, I think, a first baseman try to play through something like that. Because, well, you know, he can fake it on the throws. It's all right if he can't really, you know. It's okay if it's not. You're more likely to have a first baseman try to play through something than some other positions because we think of it as a more relatively limited spot. You know, one thing I would note, I'm sure I told this story last spring, but one thing I would note, particularly with veterans and with even particularly competitive veterans, and I'm not accusing any of these guys of this. It is entirely possible that all of these guys have very significant injuries that are exactly the amount of time they are. So it just reminded me of it. I want to be very clear on that. But I covered a veteran player in spring training who every single year mysteriously came down with a sore calf or sore quad or sore ankle after about a week of camp games, and mysteriously healed with about a week of games left to go. There are some veteran guys who are just not in any real huge hurry to get out there and play spring training games. Now, again, in the case of Beltre and Gonzalez, these are guys who are going to miss the Classic, it sounds like, and I think that's, you know, definitely a disappointment for them. But I would just not put too much stock in minor nagging injuries for veterans in spring training, because some of these guys aren't really crazy about playing these games and are perfectly fine to sit down for a week or so.
Yeah, and to put these injuries in perspective, we haven't moved any of those players in the rankings on our fantasy preview for the season. So, I mean, they haven't hit the point yet, even though we're talking about which ones we're most concerned about, none of them have hit the point yet where we've decided to lower their either per-game production or total production.
We move on down the line here. Talking saves. You know, this is another topic we did last spring. My eternal skepticism on this, and I think you share it to some extent, it is one thing for a manager to talk about unconventional save setups in late February. It is another thing for a manager actually to do it in April. So we're going to talk about all these because they're interesting and because, goodness knows, I hope some team goes to a less save-driven bullpen model. But I just want to be on record as officially saying, until I see a team really doing this over the course of the year, I'm going to be skeptical. With that in our bag, we start with the A's, a team we talked about before in this same context. They have a whole lot of guys who actually could be pretty good. I mean, this could be a pretty good bullpen. They've got a lot of guys who can get outs, guys who have pitched in the ninth, and the kind of club where maybe it makes sense to mix and match. Madsen, Dull, Doolittle, Casilla, Axford. Hendricks was a guy who's become a pretty good reliever and wouldn't be a ridiculous idea if somebody wanted to throw him out there. I don't think he's in this mix. But when you look at that bunch, is there anybody you're going to jump on without knowing that one guy is pitching the ninth?
No, not really. I might take Madsen late in a mixed league and just see, just because he got enough saves last year that maybe they just stick with him. I was interested in Dull, but the A's didn't really mention him when they initially talked about their closer options. They more talked about the veterans as far as Madsen, Doolittle, Casilla. So that's kind of, not to you know, for puns, but it's dulled my enthusiasm on Dull. And now I'm kind of out on him. I kind of want to hear something from them because we also know that managers often love their veterans at the end of the game. So I think right now I'm kind of wait and see, but I might take Madsen in the last round. Do you see that any differently?
I'd really need to see Madsen was the guy to have any interest in him at all. The two guys that I would be interested if they really got the opportunity, would be Dull and Doolittle. Those are the two guys. But as we've talked about before, I don't think it's likely to be Doolittle, unfortunately. But those are the two guys where I would actually be intrigued if they won it. Madsen, I sort of feel might be a placeholder. I mean, I take him if I needed saves. I'm not saying I wouldn't if he were the guy, but he's in that category of I need to know he is the guy before I jump on. Kind of a similar situation in San Diego, but even more wide open. They're not going to be very good. The one guy you like, I think, if he gets the opportunity, is Capps. But we don't really know what Capps is going to be able to do on opening day. We don't know what he's going to look like. To me, this is a steer clear until and unless something becomes really clear. Is there anybody you like even a little bit in that bunch?
Well, like you said, it's Capps for me. I think because of his upside, I might take Capps over any of those Oakland A's that we already discussed.
Yeah.
Just as far as I can draft Capps, if he needs to open the year on the DL because he still isn't quite ready, then I can probably stash him. And then if he is ready, you know, he's probably either the closer or not, whereas with the A's, they're talking about multiple relievers. The Padres haven't really talked about multiple closers. They've more just said it's a wide-open battle. But I do get the impression they're going to pick someone, and I really hope it is Capps because he could be really exciting with what he can produce for a strikeout total.
Sort of in between those two, the Phillies have named Jeanmar Gomez their guy, but, 2 months ago they were saying they weren't going to name anybody right out front. They were going to have a competition. And I think anybody who looks at this club finds it hard to believe, that might be overstating it, I personally look at them and I find it hard to believe that Gomez is still the guy by the end of the year. Benoit certainly be in that mix. Neris could be in that mix. Ramos could be in that mix. You know, Neshek, just based on experience, could be in that mix. I don't think he is as exciting as some of the younger guys, but you wouldn't be shocked if they decided to turn to him. One, do you like Gomez anything more than sort of a last closer on the board? And two, is there somebody that you're interested in as a hedge?
Yeah, even knowing that that Gomez is going to be the closer, I still wouldn't draft him in a mixed league. I don't think he'll hold the role. The strikeout total is going to be low. Hector Neris, to me, is interesting. And, I think in a mixed league I would be interested in taking him late and kind of stashing him and seeing if Gomez not only doesn't hold the role but doesn't hold it even during April. But you're right, they could go to Benoit. I understand that teams don't have to use their best reliever as their closer, but I feel like the Phillies aren't even using one of their best three or four relievers as their closer. I just don't think that I would be surprised if Gomez has that even by that job even by the middle of May. I would be surprised. But you and I said basically the exact
that's right
about Gomez at this time last year, and for 5 months he proved us wrong.
Yeah, I now part of that is I do think they have better options. Some of the young guys are a little more seasoned. They've got a couple extra veterans. They may have more alternatives. But I also don't think they're going to be in any real urgency to make that change. You know, this team still understands, the organization still understands that it's not quite there yet. They are not playing for, I mean, they are playing for this year. They want to win this year. But it's not a case where all the pressure is on. So they have a little leeway, I think. So that affects it a little bit. We go to Cleveland, where Cody Allen is, in fact, the guy. And he was pretty good last year. It's kind of hard to be too upset about that. But there's also a guy, Luke, lurking right behind him in Andrew Miller. I'm inclined to believe that Allen gets you somewhere in that 35 to 40 range and Miller doesn't get more than two or three. I think they're happy to make it work that way. I think that October is a different animal, and they will be aggressive with them if they get back there again. But I'm sort of inclined to believe that Allen is a guy, and unless he just blows up and loses it, he holds it. Do you have any more skepticism than I do?
No, I believe Allen's the guy, and I'm with you on, I feel like 35, my feeling was maybe Allen gets about 35 saves, but acknowledging how incredibly talented Miller is, they maybe throw him 8 saves, something like that. He maybe picks up 1 or 2 a month where the situation is just really nice to bring in a lefty, or, you know, Allen pitched the day before and they just go with Miller. Kind of, like I said, kind of a hat tip to them from Terry Francona, you know, acknowledging that he's a really good closer, could be a really good closer. And I think the Indians are good enough to produce maybe close to 45 saves between them. So this could be a situation where Allen gets 3 wins and 35 saves. Miller gets a half a dozen wins, maybe even 7 wins, because he pitches a lot of high-leverage situations earlier in the games, and then gets 7 or 8 saves, at which point both of them will help even 10-team league teams.
And then we move to the Reds, who, as of now, are apparently going by committee. I would love to see it. Again, I don't believe it. But, you know, there's a difference. One of the things we've talked about before is the variation in bad teams with closers. And bad teams are going to win or lose 2-1 and 3-2. You don't mind having their closers. Bad teams are going to be playing 7-5 and 8-7 games. There's a little less desire to have the closer. I kind of put the Reds in that second category. And the point of that being, I'm not sure who, even if they were to win it, I'd be that excited about. Is there anybody from that bunch of Reds relievers that you like?
No, not at all. And I do believe that if any team goes with the actual closer committee, I think it's going to be the Reds, simply because they've been emphatic about it going way back to the middle of winter when they signed Drew Storen. When that happened, you know, they were pretty clear that they wanted to use a committee. And as soon as they got to spring training, they said they wanted to use a committee, and that committee would have as many as 4 pitchers in it. And they really talked about being intrigued by looking at different ways to manage the bullpen. And I do think that they're in a perfect spot to play with this a little bit, because they're now, especially after trading Brandon Phillips now, like, they're deep in the rebuild. And even Reds fans, I think, will be cool with some shaky bullpen outings while they play with this and see how it could work for them. Like, I feel like if any team is in the right spot as far as they don't have a real closer on the roster, like an established closer, they aren't going to be competing for the postseason this year, and even their own fans know it. And they seem to really want to try this. I think this might be the one team that tries the closer committee, at which point, in a mixed league, you're not really interested in any of the relievers.
We will move on to catchers, excuse me, in just a moment. But before we move on, we want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the universe of MLB's future stars. Recent guests include Braves phenom Ozzie Albies, Yankees young slugger Greg Bird, and Rays new hurler Jose De Leon, who talked about being the subject of trade rumors 3 days before he was traded. Search for MLB Pipeline on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts and click subscribe. This is an area where we, MLB.com, have just taken enormous steps in recent years. Jonathan has become one of the real leaders. We brought in another one of the real leaders in the field in Jim Callis. You should be reading Pipeline stuff anyway, and if you're into it, you should listen to their podcast, because those guys do great, great work.
Yeah, and for fantasy owners, getting out in front of the field as far as your knowledge of prospects is just hugely important. We've seen so many players the last couple of years come into the majors and really hit the ground running and help fantasy teams right away. And yeah, the work of Jonathan and Jim, like, I've come to really depend on reading their articles, listening to their podcasts, checking out the Pipeline rankings and all the details in there. Like, it's so valuable to try to get ahead of your league in that area.
We now move on to catchers. Like I said, I think maybe we start with the strategy discussion here, because it really is a strategy question, where if you are in a league where there are only going to be 10 catchers drafted total, it's really a different look from if you're in a league where, say, there are going to be 30 catchers drafted total. It really, there was last year a really wide tier of sort of adequate catchers. And some of those guys, now I will say, I stumbled on Wilson Ramos, who turned into be way more than adequate. But there's almost a degree to which in some of these leagues you can almost stream catchers to some extent, because their teams go through a lot of guys. How does your catcher strategy vary from league to league when you draft?
Yeah, in a one-catcher league, I mean, the value goes way down. In a one-catcher league, I'm kind of thinking about our top tier of catcher, the Posey-type catchers, in maybe like round 6. I'm not going to go that aggressively for them in the first 4 or 5 rounds when I can be getting, you know, my stud outfielders, my aces. maybe about round 6. The tier 2 guys maybe in round like 12 or so, and I'm totally comfortable with missing out on all of those players and doing something that we talked about earlier in this podcast where you just grab a Wieters or a Russell Martin later, and then you kind of play waivers throughout the season and pick up catchers who are playing well or who have favorable schedules coming up. Because on a one-catcher league, there are going to be many catchers on waivers. In a two-catcher league, it's a totally different animal. I want to get two of the top 15 or 20 catchers for sure, so I'm going to bump guys like Lucroy and Posey into the first, say, 4 rounds or so of a draft. I'm fine with them around round 4. And then those tier 2 or tier 3 guys are in the middle rounds of my draft because I'd like to come away with a couple Brian McCann types because I don't want to have, you know, Mike Zunino or someone even actually, you could go even a lot lower than him, but someone who hits 210 or someone who provides me with no power in my starting lineup if I can avoid it. So there's a massive difference. The league size doesn't really matter. It's really that one or two catcher. It makes a huge, huge difference in the way you address the position during the draft.
We move to the actual players, and Tier 1, Buster Posey, Jonathan Lucroy, and Gary Sanchez. And those are three really, really different choices. You know, you look at Posey, and I think there's reason to be worried. This is a guy, 24, 15, 22, 19 home runs, and then 14 last year. He turns 30 this March. It would not be shocking if last year was kind of the new normal for Posey, if the player we're looking at now is a 290, 15 home run kind of player. That's a very good player, but that's not the kind of MVP candidate that we were talking about 2 or 3 years ago when he was hitting 310, 320, hitting 20-plus home runs, even winning a batting title in 2012. Whereas compared to that, Lucroy had a real power breakout last year after a very quiet 15, returned to being, and in fact had a career day, career year, I mean. So, and in between them, Gary Sanchez is a guy who, look, we honestly don't know. I know a lot of people got really excited, and it was more than just a couple of weeks, but I can't shake having some skepticism. So how do you rank those guys, and how do you kind of weigh the risk-reward of those guys?
Yeah, to me, Posey's still number one, and I know what you mean about that this could end up being the new normal for him, but when I delve a little deeper into his numbers, what's interesting for me is he had his highest career rate of hard contact last season, but his lowest career home run to fly ball percentage. So those two things don't really jive for me. He also did hit fewer fly balls. So those two things really push down his home run total. I'm expecting them to bounce back a little bit this year, so 18 home runs, something like that. You know, I don't expect the Giants to be an offensive juggernaut, but the floor is just so incredibly high with Posey as far as a bad season's like a 285, 288 batting average that he's still number one for me. But I think Lucroy's not getting enough credit as someone who's been very good in recent years. I mean, the power went up last season, but, you know, he's hit 301 in a season. He's hit 299 in a season. He had a season with 82 RBI. He had a season with 73 runs scored. Like, he's produced some nice totals. I feel like he's not quite as consistent as Posey, but really consistent. To me, they're the top two catcher options just because the floors for both are really high. And then Sanchez is just such a wild card. I would put him a little bit behind them just for the flop possibility, even though I do think we'll probably get 25 homers out of him.
Tier 2 gets really interesting, and the guy that jumps out to me, well, we'll give you the names first. That seems like the fair thing to do. Wilson Contreras, JT Realmuto, and Evan Gattis. And Realmuto is really the interesting guy to me. And what jumps out is those 12 steals and 8 the year before. And the Marlins talk about that. They like that. They have no problem with their catcher running. They love the fact that they have an athletic catcher. Sounds like they're going to give him a little time at first base to sort of take some stress off of him. If you can get a guy who contributes in a few other ways and get 10, 12 steals out of your catcher, that's awfully valuable. What do you like? What do you think a final line on Realmuto is this year?
Yeah, my concern with Realmuto, he hit 303 last year. He doesn't walk a lot. His BABIP last year was 357, which is, even for an athletic catcher, is pretty high. So my concern with him is that he hits 270 this year, and then with the fewer base hits, maybe the 12 steals become 8 steals, which was his total the previous year, which is still valuable, But if you get to 10 or 11 homers and 8 steals and 270, then he's a little bit worse than last season. I think he's fine in the second tier. I don't think a big power breakout's coming, so I don't see much of a ceiling there. To me, tier 2 is really interesting. Is Real Muto out of the three catchers the one that you would prefer?
I'm not sure that he would be. I like Contreras a lot, and the thing that I wanted to ask you about is, let's say that at, I don't know, mid-season last year, the question was, who do you think you'd rather have in 17, Gary Sanchez or Wilson Contreras? And you know, I'm not sure I know what the answer would have been. So, look, what Sanchez did last year, it happened. It was amazing, and he was a beast. But I think the gap between those two guys going forward might not be all that wide. I like Contreras a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one of the problems for Contreras is a little bit of playing time concern,
yep.
just
mm-hmm.
that they have Miguel Montero, who is the backup catcher, but is a little more accomplished than most teams' backup catcher. And they have Schwarber they could put in there at times. So whereas Sanchez, we know, will have the high workload. But, yeah, I think Contreras is also my favorite from Tier 2. I would like Gattis. It's just the playing time concerns. You know, how much will he catch and how often will he be the designated hitter?
Yeah.
I mean, there's 30-homer potential in Gattis, but there could also just be 20 homers because he only gets, you know, 330 at-bats this season. I feel like he's going to get more playing time than people are anticipating, but I can't lock it in.
Well, and the thing with Gattis to me is they have so many bats that if he doesn't produce, he could end up buried.
Yeah, totally. So, one thing with the Astros is, yeah, he could end up buried. Aoki could end up buried if he gets off to a slow start. There's so many moving pieces there. And I think a lot of it's how much do they want Carlos Beltran to play the field.
Tier 3 is where kind of what I was talking about a little earlier we get to. A whole bunch of guys where it starts becoming what your preference is. Salvador Perez, Yasmani Grandal, Russell Martin, Brian McCann, Wellington Castillo, Matt Wieters. And again, it's not an exaggeration to say that sometimes in one catcher leagues, one of these guys will be sitting on waivers at any given time. So, you know, it is, you really would love to get, I think what you're looking for at this point, to me, in that kind of league, is who's most likely to be the guy you hold on to all year and say, yes, I'm really glad I got him. And to me, the number one guy on this list for that is Castillo. Castillo is the guy going to Baltimore, going to a place that's a really friendly park to hit in, going to a lineup that's going to hit a lot of home runs. That's a guy where I can see, I'm not saying he has a year like Ramos, but that's a guy where I can see somewhat akin to last year with Ramos, where you drafted him not all that early and ended up with him being a really key part of a good season.
Yeah, he's definitely someone, I mean, we have them all in the same tier, but Sal Perez is going to require an earlier pick than Castillo. To me, Perez maybe has the highest floor just because his workload
yep.
is so high
yep.
that he just gets you the counting stats. But you can get Castillo a few rounds later, and his ceiling is just as high as Perez's for sure. I think he's a nice grab late. I'm interested in your perspective on Brian McCann. Do you think leaving Yankee Stadium is going to hurt him much or not really?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I think he's going to another place that should be a good place for him to hit. I kind of like him. I kind of quietly like him this year. I'm not running out to get him, but I could see that working out really well, actually.
Yeah, and I like that middle or bottom half now of the Astros lineup. Like, they really
yep.
deepened it this offseason with him, Reddick, Aoki, Beltran. Like, now we're in a spot where McCann could hit six for them and still be surrounded by some good hitters. Are there any in that Tier 3 that you'd want to avoid? Because there probably is someone there who hits 225 with 14 home runs and really leaves everyone high and dry.
Well, the guy I would avoid relative to his draft position is Perez.
Yeah.
Not because I don't like him, just because I don't think the value is there. As you note, the floor is high, but I also, you know, I worry a little bit about miles on a catcher like him. You know, not that it's going to be a catastrophic drop, but I look at a guy like Molina, who just wasn't the same guy. I know Perez is significantly younger, but you put that kind of mileage on a catcher, and I just already, even as young as he is, start worrying when it's going to start to show. So it's not that I don't like Perez, but I do think I don't like him as much as it would take to get him where he's probably going to go.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and we have him in Tier 3. That's where we value him. In a lot of drafts, he's going with Gattis and Real Muto and those Tier 2 catchers. And, yeah, I'm not willing to go there. And I think the other one from Tier 3 that I think could go either way, and we've talked about him a lot now, is Wieters. There's an optimistic side for Wieters too, or there's the pessimistic side where the switch in Parks and maybe he ends up batting eighth, and then in 10 or 12 team one catcher leagues he ends up on waivers. So he's someone to me who could be top 7 or 8 catcher, or could be 17th.
And one of the things to remember with the Nats is, look, none of the guys they have there is a world beater, but they have three other guys who can play. When they have three other catchers, they're probably going to deal one of them, but they've got Norris, they've got Lobatone, they've got Severino. This is another one of those cases where if Wieters doesn't produce, I know Dusty likes his veterans, and I'm not saying Dusty's going to cut the cord quickly on him, but they do have alternatives, and even if he doesn't get benched if it doesn't go well, you could certainly see his playing time diminish because they've got other choices.
Yeah, I like Wieters less if they keep Norris. I know there's been rumors that they're going to deal Norris, but it's harder to trade baseball players sometimes than people like to believe, so... Mm-hmm. Norris right now is off mixed league draft list. I could see a scenario where Norris gets traded to a team with a better park and, you know, maybe an American League team, who knows, but and then ends up being as productive as Wieters.
Yep, I can see that for sure. All right, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk. And we will talk to you again next week when it will be March.